Thank you to the Washington County Republican Party for hosting this event, and thank you for both the candidates for coming this evening. Really appreciate it. This is a forum for the benefit of the Republican voters of the 5th District to... Sammy's telling me something I don't know about. Yep. Good point. Sandy reminds us, for me to remind all of you, to please turn your cell phones off so as not to disrupt the proceedings. Thank you. As I was saying, this is a forum put together by the Washington County Republican Party to allow all of the voters of the 5th District to get to know the two candidates running for the Republican nomination for the 5th District. Joining us this evening is Congressman Jim Sensenbrenner on my left. He's represented the 5th District since 1979. Prior to that, he served in the Wisconsin legislature for 10 years. He and his wife live in Menominee Falls and have two sons. Also joining us on my right is Dr. Jim Berkey. Dr. Berkey is a professor of history at Concordia University, his alma mater. He lives in Medline with his wife and three children. The format for this evening was agreed upon by both candidates and will be as follows. Each candidate will be given a two-minute opening statement. For the first half of the forum, I will ask questions that were prepared ahead of time by a committee in the Washington County Republican Party. During this period, audience members are invited to submit written questions. These questions will be filtered to prevent duplicate questions, to prevent inappropriate questions. And then halfway through the hour, they will be given to me, and we'll spend the second half of the hour asking the audience questions. Each candidate will be given 2 minutes to respond to each question, and we'll alternate. It goes first on the responses. There is no time plan for rebuttals, but I reserve the right to offer a candidate rebuttal if I deem necessary. Also, there's no time allocated for follow-up questions. However, I also reserve the right to ask that if I so choose. So, I ask that both the candidates and the audience respect the time limits to allow the audience here today, and those who will be viewing this either online or on Wisconsin Eye, who's here in the back of the room, respect the time for everybody who will view this so that everybody can learn as much as possible about the two candidates. And with that, let us begin. Congressman Sensenbrenner.
Thank you very much, Lord. I'd like to thank both you and the Washington County Republican Party for putting together this forum tonight. I think it's appropriate that the Republican Party sponsor this forum because this is a Republican primary. Before beginning, I'd like to introduce my wife, Cheryl, my partner and best friend, 31 years, the mother of my two sons. Tonight, I ask for your vote on September 9th to continue common sense, conservative representation of this district in the Congress of the United States. America faces difficult times. We have a soft economy. We have high energy prices. We've lost jobs to China, India, and other countries. We face the threat of international terrorism, both home and abroad. And we now see a resurgence in Russia. These are difficult issues. They're going to require a steady hand on the tiller, both in the White House and in the Senate and the House of Representatives. And by renominating me next month, you will have that strong hand on the tiller, because I believe I've been a strong, reliable, and proven voice in the House of Representatives. I do my job today with the same dedication and enthusiasm as when I was first elected your representative. Since the last election in 2006, I've held 236 town meetings and office hours. I've attended more parades, picnics, broad fries, spaghetti dinners, and other type of civic events than I would care to count. I'm here, I'm accessible, and I'm accountable. And that's what I think people want in their representative. With your support and with your vote next month, that type of representation will continue. Thank you.
Dr. Berkey?
Thanks, Alan. I'm going to be in trouble if I don't introduce my wife, my beautiful wife, Susan, mother of our three children. And by the way, we didn't see them. Thank you all for coming out tonight. It's really exciting to see all of us out here enthusiastically exercising their citizenship. And I'll remind all of us that this is a Republican primary, but because we live in a fairly gerrymandered district, we are again in an election cycle where there's no Democratic challenger, which means that on September 9th, that is your election. That is our only choice, our only real choice for congressman this year. Next debate, as I see it, is really about honesty. It's about honesty about how our Republican Party and why our Republican Party betrayed us, violated our values in those 6 years when they were in power in Washington, D.C., my Republican Party. Honesty about the debt, the burden that we put on our children. $10 trillion coming up this next month, $53 trillion over the lifetimes of our children. Honesty about our nation's failed energy policy. For 30 years, we've known what was coming and done nothing. Honesty about incumbency. This isn't about accessibility. It is about asking the question, is it good for our country to have one man virtually hold an office for 30 years, almost unchallenged? Is that good for democracy? Honesty about ethics in government. Why is it okay for, or why is it wrong for someone to accept a cash contribution or a cash gift from a lobbyist, but it's okay to accept free travel and other gifts? We're at a critical juncture in our history, and for Republicans here tonight, I'm asking for an opportunity to help you embrace new leadership and a new direction in this country. Tonight's an opportunity to wipe aside the dishonesty that has been responsible for what we've seen in Washington, for the expansion of government, and for the burden placed on our kids. Looking forward to the chance to talk honestly about some of these issues, and again, just thank you for being here tonight and for the opportunity to renew the vote.
I would remind the audience that you can submit questions anytime during this first half hour. If you do have a question you want to submit, please just raise your hand and there will be somebody in the back of the room who will bring you a card and then collect it later. With that said, let's begin with the first question. The past few years have seen a remarkable increase in the cost of energy. From the cost of heating their homes to the pain at the pump, the residents of the 5th District are having to alter their lifestyles in order to afford the cost of energy. What should Congress do, if anything, about America's energy policy? And we'll begin with Congressman Sensenbrenner.
What Congress should do is to have a Manhattan Project type, which has everything on the table. We can't exclude any type of energy alternative, but we are to stop the hemorrhage of the transfer of $700 billion a year from our pocketbooks to the pocketbooks of people who heat us. I favor having everything on the table. Drilling, coal, shale, tar sands, natural gas, solar and wind power and renewables. But that's not going to be enough, because what we're going to have to also do is to build the infrastructure to get that energy to where the people are. It doesn't make any sense to drill in Anwar when the nearest pipeline is 70 miles away. It doesn't make any sense to pass the Pickens plan without having an expedited way of putting transmission lines in to get that electricity from North Dakota to where the people are. And we need to build more refineries because we're already up to the limit of the refinery production. So my efforts in Congress are going to be to put everything on the table. And I would hope that if Speaker Pelosi allows us to vote after Labor Day, which she said she wouldn't last month, she would open up the process so that the House can work its will and have amendments rather than gaming the system and having a bill with a lot of high taxes and unpalatable non-market-based alternatives and then saying that that's the energy solution, which is my way or the highway. So let's open everything up. Let's have a fair and transparent process, and I think we'll be able to get ourselves out of the oil barrel that we've stuck ourselves into.
Thank you, Congressman. Dr. Bergen.
I agree with some of what the Congressman has said, although he is right about infrastructure. We have an infrastructure in place for something right now called corn ethanol. And it's in place because Republicans in 2005 passed an energy bill that created that infrastructure. Corn ethanol is probably the worst kind of fuel we can put in our tanks. Congressman Sensenbrenner was one of many Republicans to vote for that bill. And I'm glad to see that many of our Republicans are now opposing corn ethanol. But frankly, they're the ones who are responsible for helping put it in place. I do agree that we need a Manhattan Project to get ourselves off of foreign oil. But we've needed that Manhattan Project for 30 years now, and it hasn't happened. I like to go back to 1978. That's the year that Congressman Sensenbrenner ran for this office for the first time. We knew in 1978, 1979 what was coming. And this isn't new to anybody. We've gone through oil crisis after oil crisis, and still we had no results in Washington on bringing about that Manhattan Plan that we needed. And in the meanwhile, our energy consumption has gone from 25% reliance on foreign oil to 70% reliance on foreign oil. And the people we're buying oil from are people that hate us. Saudi Arabia, Venezuela, Russia, all regimes that are wholly undemocratic and are actually supported and propped up by our petrol dollars. This is one area where there's been a complete and a total failure on the part of our congressional leadership, whether it's Democrats in power or Republicans in power. And frankly, the only way we're going to see change is if we get somebody else in Congress instead of sending the same people back who put us over a barrel.
Thank you, Doctor. Next question. The United States has a serious problem with illegal immigration, with an estimated 12 to 15 million illegal aliens in the country today. What should Congress do to resolve the problem? We'll start with Dr. Burton.
Thanks, it is a problem. It's a serious problem. It's one that has grown now for a couple of decades. As I see it, first of all, the problem of illegal immigration is a function of our Congress's approach to legal immigration. When we make it harder and harder for people to come here legally, we increase the incentives for people to come here illegally. Just a few years ago, I led a group of Concordia students down to Mexico. We worked in Tijuana, right across the border from San Diego, literally a dump on the outskirts of town, building a house for a family of nine. I was living in a ramshackle house built out of cardboard. It had a tattered blue tarp for the roof. They have potable drinking water brought in, and that was about all that they could afford. These are desperate people who oftentimes come here because they're looking for work. And when we have an immigration policy, a legal immigration policy, that puts caps, for example, on seasonal workers, the H-2B visa, of 65,000 for the entire country. Now, that's probably enough maybe for San Diego during a peak harvest time. We rapidly increase the incentives for illegal immigration. Now, with regard to the immigrants who are here today, illegal, this is one area where there is a vast disagreement between Congressman Sensenbrenner and myself, because his bill essentially is one that proposed to criminalize people who are here illegal. It's not a criminal, it's a civil offense right now, which would mean putting them into our jail system, rounding people up, splitting up families. And we're talking about families and parents, by the way, of millions of children who are American citizens. I'm from a party that boasts that we are the party of family values. That offends my family values. There are people who do need to be deported who should not be here. But for those who are members of families of American citizens, we need to protect American citizens and protect American families.
Thank you, Doctor. Congressman?
I think the Republican Party is also the party of the rule of law. If you break the law, you must pay the consequences for breaking the law. We have to deal with the issue of illegal immigration first. And the reason we have to do that is because it's always cheaper to break the law and hire an illegal immigrant than it is to hire either a U.S. citizen or someone who has a green card and work authorization and is here legally. I make no apologies for putting the issue of illegal immigration on the national agenda. And I was able to get the only border control bill through one house of Congress in December 2005. We should have done it a long time ago, but there wasn't the support to do that. Unfortunately, the Senate bowed to the illegal immigrants and amnesty lobby, and they passed an amnesty bill instead, which the American people will never accept. And Congress's opposition to amnesty for illegal immigrants, I think, reflects the overwhelming sentiment of the American people. What we need to do is to secure the border. We need to complete that fence between San Diego and Tijuana. We need to have more border patrol officers. I'm happy that even though my bill didn't pass, other legislation to accomplish both of those things did pass. The system of electronically verifying the accuracy of Social Security numbers, which was in my bill, was reauthorized last month by an overwhelming vote of the Senate and the House of Representatives. The reason we aren't doing anything is because the Democratic leadership has said that they don't want to even touch the issue of immigration until the first year of the second Democratic administration, 2013 by their count, much later by ours. The provisions that I have offered ended up, a lot of them becoming law. I think that our country is safer and we are having a better handle on the illegal immigrant problem, but there's much more left to do.
Thank you, Congressman. The tax burden to support the federal government has become extremely heavy. The expense of entitlements, the military, pork, and everything else is too much for some families to afford. Are you willing to extend the so-called Bush tax cuts and enact more tax cuts? Furthermore, are you willing to cut the spending equal to those tax cuts? And we'll begin with Congressman Sensenbrenner.
I proudly voted for the Bush tax cuts. They were tax cuts for the middle class. They should be made permanent. And it's Republicans that have been pushing to make those tax cuts permanent. And the revenue has gone up under the lower tax rates as more people have gotten jobs and more people have gotten raises and thus pay more taxes. The problem with the budget deficit is not the lack of revenue. It's the fact that Congress spends too much money. I'm proud of the fact that the National Taxpayers Union, which rates every member of Congress on all votes relating to taxes and spending, has consistently named me in the top 10 of 435 representatives for my votes to lower taxes and to cut spending. And just this afternoon, the Citizens Against Government Waste announced their roll call for 2007. I was one of only three members of the House of Representatives to get a 100 score. And the other two were just... House member of the House as a whole averaged 30%. I'm 70% better. I don't think you can get too much better than that. Thank you.
Thank you, Congressman. Dr. Berkey?
Congressman is right that spending is out of control in Washington, but it grew out of control during the term when Republicans were in control in Washington. Congressman Sensenbrenner's votes to cut taxes were not votes to cut taxes. We have not had our taxes cut. Taxes were deferred. We were all cut checks, and the bill was handed to our children. If you want to know where that $10 trillion debt has come from, it has come from votes on the part of Democrats to increase spending in ways that are not paid for with tax revenues, and on the part of Republicans. This is about being honest tonight, and we have to be honest, because tax cuts that aren't accompanied by spending cuts are not tax cuts. They are deferred taxes that go to our children. And over those six-year period, when Republicans were in charge, our party, we added $3 trillion to that national debt, a bill that we're going to hand to our kids. Now, Congressman Sensenbrenner, I'm glad he's got the nice rating from Citizens Against Government Waste. They gave him, by the way, a rating of nearly 90% in 2003 when he cast the deciding vote for Medicare Part D, one of the deciding votes, which is likely the biggest government program in American history. $8.7 trillion liability that is unfunded. That bill was passed, not a single revenue was raised to pay for it, and the bill is going to go to our kids. The top accountant in the country, General Walker, who was here with Paul Ryan about a month ago, called it the most irresponsible program, new program, since the 1960s. Now, for all of Congressman Sensenbrenner's votes against this pork and that pork, and I agree he's voted against pork for Wisconsin. He's voted for plenty of pork for other states, $95 billion to be exact. I think it's wholly immoral and duplicitous to stand here and look us in the eye and tell us that as other Republicans, they've been fiscally responsible when they gave us programs like Medicare Part D that pass on it for our kids.
Is the current size and expense of our armed forces appropriate for the nation's interests, or should it be increased or decreased? We'll begin with Congressman. We'll begin with Dr. Berkey.
Sorry. We do need a strong and robust military. But I fashion myself as an old-style Republican, an old-style conservative. If you go back to the era before too many Republicans became big government Republicans, to the era of what I consider myself an authentic Republican, you go back to a time when you found Republicans were fiscally responsible across the board. Milton Friedman, the great economist who passed away recently, commented on, for example, the tax cuts that Mr. Sensenbrenner worked for. And he said it's disingenuous for some Republicans to say that they've paid for themselves because they don't pay for themselves. This is one of the fathers of modern conservative economics. But traveling back in history to the old-style Republicans, these are the Republicans who said spending cuts precede tax cuts. Tax cuts don't precede spending cuts. And we also said that we've got to be very wary about big government. One of the great Republican presidents of the 20th century, certainly Reagan, you've got to go back to Dwight Eisenhower. And remember, Eisenhower was the only president in the post-war period since World War II to actually decrease the military while still making a state. I think we need to be very cautious about expanding the military because far too often Republicans fill those military bills with pork. Some of the pork bills that I referred to, the roughly $90-plus billion Congressman Sensenbrenner voted for just over that six-year period, came in the form of defense bills that were jammed full of pork barrel spending. It's hard to vote against pork when it's in a defense bill. It's a lot easier to vote against pork when it's in a bill that maybe Democrats support. So we need to be very worried about that because I simply believe that as conservatives, it's going to be hard for us to argue that government should be big here or small here. We need to make it as limited as possible everywhere while still doing our duty to protect ourselves and our men and women abroad.
Thank you. President Reagan rebuilt our military. President Reagan gave America pride in itself. That cost money. And Ronald Reagan knew that it would cost money because we rammed our military down too far after the Vietnam War, and particularly during the Carter years. First of all, we need to pay our soldiers an adequate wage and to give them good benefits so that they will enlist and reenlist. We need to give them the equipment so that they can protect themselves. We need to give the Veterans Administration benefits so that they can provide medical care for those who have come back with service-connected disabilities, including very serious ones. But if one's to be effective in Congress, one can't make the perfect the enemy of the good. When you get a bill that is voted on as a package, you've got to vote yes or no. If you want to vote no all the time, fine. But there are some times where we have to do things, and to build barracks for the troops and to provide them the types of benefits they need has got to be done because the Congress has got an obligation to those kids who have volunteered to serve their country. And I'm not going to turn my back on that. Now, granted, there are things in non-amendable bills that I don't like. But the fact of the matter is that those bills go down, the troops aren't fed, they're not housed, they're not paid, they don't get any benefits, and that would be a great breach of faith between the Congress and the people who volunteer. Thank you, Congressman.
Russia recently invaded Georgia, threatened a nuclear strike against Poland after they agreed to allow the U.S. to put interceptor missiles in their territory, and has been rattling their saber towards Ukraine. What should the United States do in response to Russia's continued aggression? We'll begin with Congressman Sensenbrenner.
First thing we need to do is to be energy independent. Russia was weak and subservient during the declining days of the Soviet Union because they had a very sick economy. Could not maintain the military complex that the Communist Party wanted it to. Russia is now a rich country because the price of oil has gone up and the price of natural gas has gone up. And Russia is more dangerous now than it was in the 80s and the 70s before the Cold War ended. We need to have a strong but pragmatic approach toward Russia. John McCain is right. The invasion of Georgia and the annexation of the two Georgian territories announced today are a sign that Russia is going to become aggressive. The first thing the new president needs to do is needs to build up a coalition of those who are able to stand up against Russian aggression and Russian imperialism. The coalition will start by those that were under the communist yoke during the Cold War. But we have to broaden that, particularly to our friends in Western Europe, who are more dependent on Russian natural gas than we are dependent on Middle Eastern oil. That's going to be tough. That's why John McCain should be elected president.
Thank you, Congressman. Dr. Berkey?
Thanks. I'm going to just back up very quickly on the question of the armed forces. One of the things that perplexed me about our approach to military spending, I'm for military spending, particularly during wartime. We should be spending to equip our troops. But if we're going to do it, let's pay for it. Most of this war has been fought on borrowed money, my friends. It's been borrowed, and we've hidden the expense with gimmicks like off-budget accounting. I also believe that we're going to attract new talent to the military with bills like the most current GI Bill, which our congressman voted against, which would have given people like the students in my class who serve in the military an opportunity to go to college under similar benefit levels that they would have received after World War II, but no longer received. Now they've got to take out loans and pay for it themselves, even after having put their lives on the line in the rent. The congressman is right about Russia. We do need to get off of oil and get off rapidly, because the key issue here is that Russia has been emboldened by those energy revenues. The question I ask you is, do you believe that by sending the same people back to Washington, who haven't done anything for 30 years on energy, that we're going to get there? Or do you think that maybe it's going to take a new generation of leaders from Washington to finally get us off of that yoke of foreign oil? I hope you'll find that it's the latter. I'm glad also to hear Congressman expressing such strong support for John McCain, since it is about the first time I've heard it. I've been a long supporter of the man who I believe will be our next president, Mr. McCain, and I do agree with his strong approach to Russia. He's really the man to take on these challenges in these challenging times.
Thank you, Doctor. And train terrorists. They have sent fighters and equipment into Iraq to kill Americans. They have threatened to wipe the U.S.'s ally, Israel, off the map. On top of all of them, they are brazenly and aggressively going after nuclear weapons. What should the U.S. do about Iran? We'll begin with Dr. Berkey.
Iran is an interesting case study. I teach Middle Eastern history at Concordia University. And our relations with Iran were really ruined during the Carter administration. The people of Iran are, by and large, very young, very modern, very pro-Western, and they are easily whipped up into national hysteria by stances that we take towards Iran that are overly aggressive. So while we need to be very, very firm in ensuring that we prevent Iran from obtaining nuclear weapons, Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, who was the president in Iran, is a true believer, Shiite Muslim, who has an apocalyptic vision of the end of the world. And I do believe that if they got nuclear weapons, he would use them. However, I believe that relations with Iran might best be fostered with a carrot and a stick by making sure that we open up to them, that we perhaps allow them opportunities to enter the world market, as we have with China. We've got some odd disparities in our foreign policy today. We approach China by opening up our markets to them under the premise that if they have free markets and free market capitalism and have free consumer choices, that in time they're going to demand political freedom. And yet we have a completely opposite approach with places like Cuba or places like Iran. Iran is one of those places that I believe would naturally respond to outreach. So too much saber rattling with Iran, I think, is going to be very problematic for us. But at the same time, we need a firm stance working with our European allies to make sure that they do not obtain nuclear weapons.
Thank you, Dr. Berkey.
Senator problem with Iran, and that was them breaking the international law by occupying our embassy and holding our diplomats hostage for 444 days. The way to deal with Iran is from a position of strength. And the way we have a position of strength is by having both a strong economy and a strong military, which we use in a prudent manner. I want to get back to military funding. The best thing that happened since the end of the Second World War in this country is by our going to an all-volunteer military. We don't draft people anymore. The people who are in the military are there because they want to be in the military. And the professionalism that they have shown since we've gone to an all-volunteer army, I think has made every American proud, regardless of what their political persuasion may be. But we've got to be smart in keeping the all-volunteer military. I voted against the GI Bill because it gives full benefits to people in the military after 3 years. That means people won't re-enlist. And it's really expensive to train people to operate the type of equipment and weapon systems that are in a modern military. That GI Bill, if it goes to its fruition, is going to wreck the all-volunteer military. And that would be a huge shame. With Iran, I think we have to stay the course. We have to work with our Western European allies, particularly the British, French, and Germans, that have been on the front line doing the negotiations. And if Iran continues to blow off United Nations resolutions, then the sanctions should be tightened rather than loosened.
On to the audience question portion of the forum. I'd like to thank all of the audience members for submitting questions. When we have more, then we will be able to get through, so we'll cover as many as we can. So let's begin. As a Republican, what are your core values? We'll begin with Congressman Sitzler.
My core values are listening to people, limited government, keeping the tax burden down, and keeping spending in check. I don't run around bad-mouthing Republicans. I have worked as a Republican in the vineyard since my high school days. And I've spent a lot of my time building the Republican Party and electing Republicans besides myself. I will continue to do that for the rest of my life because I look at what goes on the other side. A Republican Party isn't perfect, but it's a heck of a lot better than what the Democrats have come up with and what the Democrats have done. And rather than harping on Republican failures when we haven't been able to do all that we wanted to do or gotten it wrong, we ought to be spending our time convincing voters, particularly the independent voters who decide elections, that the Republican Party is in tune with them, is with them on the issues. I've done that during my time in Congress. From the beginning, opposing Carter's gas rationing programs, having specific arguments with some of my Republican and most all of my Democrat colleagues about granting amnesty to illegal immigrants. Those are my Republican core values, and I think they're shared by the people of the 5th District since I've been out listening to them at the town meetings and all the appearances that I've had during my tenure in the Congress of the United States. Thank you.
Next, a quick follow-up on the military spending. As you guys know, there is no evidence, by the way, that our soldiers will not re-enlist if they get too many benefits. Our congressmen get plenty of plush benefits. They re-enlist every 2 years. Somebody who serves in the military for 3 years and does 2 tours, putting his life on the line in Iraq. Don't tell me that person doesn't deserve a level of benefits that still is nothing near approaching the level of benefits. The congressman will be here tonight, as with some of his allies, trying to paint me as somebody who bad-mouths Republicans, and somehow that's heresy. Well, he's not had a good career bad-mouthing, even in the past couple of years, Senator McCain, our presidential nominee. Just this past year, he was at the Republican convention bad-mouthing Republicans in the Assembly and Senate who voted with Democrats to defund Real ID. That's an inconsistency there. We need to be honest about what happened in Washington, folks, because if we don't change the people who are in Washington, nothing's going to change. I made three simple promises. These aren't just Republican values. I think these are American values. We don't spend our children's money. That's an easy one. I will never vote for anything during times of economic growth that isn't paid for. That's a basic core principle. Special interest influence has grown out of control. Too many congressmen like our own accept millions of dollars from lobbyists, hundreds of thousands of dollars in free travel and free gifts from lobbyists. I'm not going to take a single penny I have during this campaign, and I don't care if it's a free lunch from a lobbyist or from any special interest. Finally, term limits. That's a core Republican principle. If you recall, it was a core principle of the Contract with America, which our congressman signed, a citizen legislature. We need turnover in House of Representatives. I've committed myself to three terms maximum in Congress. Those are core values we all share.
Next question. What would you propose the first budget cuts? Dr. Burke.
Well, interesting question because, you know, the congressman is right in one sense that legislation in Congress is never perfect. In my perfect world, I can tell you what I cut here or there. I'm really a fan, however, of Congressman Paul Ryan's approach to the issue because Washington spending is not going to get out of control or get in control. It's out of control right now until we do one of a couple of things. One is simply put a limit on the amount of money we're spending. Now, too many Republicans, and I've got to criticize Republicans because this is a Republican primary. We've got to be honest with ourselves. Too many of us have worked with false numbers. We've falsely thrown out this idea that somehow we're going to balance our budget in 4 or 5 years. It's not going to happen, folks. Paul Ryan, if you look at his roadmap, it's AmericanRoadmap.org, an excellent study he's done, said that even if we make some serious choices over the next several years in Congress, really difficult choices, it might be 80 years before we balance our budget, and then even longer before we start to pay off this massive debt that we're putting on our kids. It is that bad. He's one of the few, what I believe, really authentic, honest Republicans in Washington. I urge you to take a look at that site. His proposal, which I'm actually very interested in, would essentially limit government growth as a percentage of gross domestic product. I think that's really the way to do it. Rather than saying, let's cut here and cut there, because too often, you know, we'll get members in Congress that will throw a ball into us, cut here, and yet continue to raid the Social Security Fund, or continue to put things off budget and hide the real cost of government funds. The honest way to do it is to look at Congressman Ryan's approach. Congressman Ryan's been working, by the way, with the fiscal wake-up tour that was here about a month ago. And took up the entire editorial page in the journal. An honest approach and one that I wholeheartedly embrace.
Paul Ryan's my friend. I helped him put together this roadmap that he introduced. I think he's on the right track, and he supports me. Which has competition in drug plans. Now, I think that he was ahead of the curve on that because senior citizens were going broke paying for their drugs. And it isn't enough to say, well, we shouldn't have passed it, leaving the senior citizens to have to pay for all of their drugs out of their own pockets. With the competition, the bill has come in lower than the initial cost estimates. And Paul Ryan was responsible for that. And I support him on that, too, because I think he was on the right track. Now, where would I cut first? I'd get rid of earmarks. I signed a pledge not to support or introduce any earmarks. As pork barrel spending, we get a better break in Wisconsin by working for formula fairness. And I work with our senators and representatives on a bipartisan basis. We changed the highway formula so that we now get back a dollar from Washington for every dollar we send in. 20 years ago, it was 68 cents on the dollar. And that's a real success story that nobody wants to talk about. But when we get in the earmark game, I can count We got 8 votes in the House. California has 53. And I know who's going to win that fight. And it ain't going to be us, so we might as well get rid of it.
Next question. This one begins, how do you feel that since Republicans are going to alter it to what you think about the current tax system in America? And would you be in favor of the abolishment of the IRS, in favor of a national sales tax, or a flat tax? We'll begin with Congressman Sensenbrenner.
Let me say the current tax system stinks. And I remember when Cheryl and I sent our tax return into the IRS and the Wisconsin Department of Revenue, I had to put about $10 worth of postage on the envelope where I send in all of the stuff. I guess I'm kind of a dinosaur because I don't believe in e-filing, because I think it's better that you have it on paper. The only way we're going to get major tax reform is to sunset the tax code on a day certain. And I voted in favor of that. And if that ever passed, that would mean that as of the day certain, there wouldn't be any taxes anymore unless Congress came up with a wholesale revision and a new tax code. The two major things on the table, both of which have pluses and minuses, are the flat tax and the fair tax, which is either a national sales tax or a consumption tax. We need to have a national debate on this issue, but we're not going to get it until we have the sunsetting of the tax code. Now, what I can say is there's precedent for this here in Wisconsin, because in 1995, the Democratic-controlled Wisconsin legislature, maybe it was 1993, passed a bill that abolished welder in Wisconsin as of a day certain, thinking that Governor Thompson would do the responsible thing and veto it. He did the responsible thing and signed it. And that meant that all the people who wanted to have more welfare had to come up with a welfare program that Tommy would sign, or the people that they claimed to be helping wouldn't get any more whatsoever. Tommy signed W-2. Our welfare rolls went down 90%. We're spending more per welfare recipient and retraining them so that they can get jobs. And we can do the same thing with the taxes if we sunset the tax code, and we ought to do it.
A couple of notes here. I'm glad to see Paul Ryan, and I don't blame him for supporting Mr. Sensenbrenner. I think we can all appreciate the kind of loyalty for a co-worker. But I'm glad that he brought up the issue of Medicare Part D. Medicare Part D. Which, again, our Republicans are responsible for, and Congressman Sensenbrenner was responsible for casting one of the decided votes here. My problem is not with Medicare Part D, Congressman, and ours shouldn't be with Medicare Part D. It should be with the fact that we passed it without paying for it. If a program is important enough to pass, it is important enough to pay for. I don't care whether it's Medicare for our seniors or whether it's funding for our troops in Iraq. If it's important enough to pass, that have the honesty and integrity to pay for it instead of kicking the bill down to my children. Now, I'm glad also that he signed the earmark pledge. I was the first to sign that earmark pledge. And my question here is, why not? Why after 30 years? Why not during the 6 years when you were in Washington and voting for the very court that he talked about in these imperfect packages? The earmark pledge says, commits Congressman Sensenbrenner now to never voting for a single bill that has an earmark in it. I was all for that, and I'm glad that right after I signed it, he did. But it's a little bit too little too late on this one. The tax system, there are some good alternatives. I mentioned again Congressman Ryan's proposal. Regardless of where we go, the thing I like about Mr. Ryan's proposal is that it is essentially it's incremental and long-term. This system is so complex. And by the way, my tax return is 2010. It is so long-term, or it is so entrenched, and so many people are so reliant on it, using accountants and massive accounting industry, that it's going to be hard to just simply overthrow a single bill. So we need to have an incremental approach. Congressman Ryan's idea of allowing people to choose in and sort of opt in into a flat tax or something like that, I think is a good idea, because it gets us there over the long-term.
States should sign the Kyoto Treaty. Dr. Burke.
I do not. Jonah 3 is really what that's yesterday's news anyway, in that it accepted places like China and India, which we all know have grown exponentially, and they're really responsible for more and more of the world's pollution. And the last thing we need right now is any legislation that disproportionately benefits China and India, because we already have an over $200 billion trade deficit that goes to China. To put a burden on our economy and at the same time benefit theirs is something that would be just highly problematic. It brings us back again to the issue of energy independence, however, because I started this campaign, some of you know, and there are some Republicans here just offended that I would dare cooperate with a Democrat as I did when I first started this campaign. I will proudly say that I'm reaching out to Republicans, Democrats, and independents alike. We all should. We should remember that Ronald Reagan won his campaign in 1980 with the help of Reagan Democrats, because he reached across the aisle, and he reached out to all voters instead of specifically to those in his own party. I've long believed that we can find common ground on environment and on energy with a radical plan to end our reliance on foreign oil. When we end our reliance on foreign oil, when we build that infrastructure for wind and solar, when we invest heavily in alternative energies, when we especially promote conservation, which is the most rapid way we can diminish our influence immediately on foreign oil, when we do that, everyone's going to be happy. It's a win for Republicans because it robs our enemies of our petrodollars, and it's a win for even advocates of global more regulation regarding global warming, because the single greatest impact on our environment from that perspective is automobiles that rely on oil. So it's a way we can really work across the aisle and cooperate.
Chinese and the Indians were doing to try to wreck our economy to their benefit. I let candidate Bush know how bad the Kyoto Treaty was, and right after he took office, he withdrew America's signature from the Kyoto Treaty. And he got a lot of criticism for that, particularly in Europe, because they pulled the wool over the eyes of Mr. Gore. The Kyoto Treaty's back. It's back in the form of legislation called Warner-Lieberman, and they say this is cap and trade as a way of reducing greenhouse gas emissions. That's a misnomer. It's cap and tax. And the taxes are going to be steep. Reducing greenhouse gases is not a free lunch. This lunch is very expensive. National Association of Manufacturers issued a study in May that said here in Wisconsin, passing Lieberman-Warner's cap and tax bill will triple the cost of electricity and natural gas and give us $10 a gallon gas at the pump. And this is all a hidden tax folded in because everybody who sells these types of energies will have to buy carbon credits. I'm the ranking Republican member on the Select Committee on Energy Independence and Global Warming. I know how this bill will kill America's economy and put us into a depression. If you reelect me, I will be honored to go to Washington to kill this bill just like I helped kill the Kyoto Treaty. Thank you.
Next question. What measures would you push to address the crippling trade and federal budget deficits? We'll begin with Congressman Sensenbrenner.
First, spend less money. Have productivity-oriented tax cuts because they put people to work. We have to be aggressive in defending our intellectual property rights laws against piracy all over the world. We're the most inventive people that God has ever put on this world, and we cannot let the inventions that have made this economy the most productive be stolen by countries like China and India, that pay their workers $1 an hour and don't give them any benefits, because we can't compete against those type of sweatshop wage countries unless we are able to keep our productivity edge. That's what we need to do to put health back into our economy. We also need to use some common sense in what we do in terms of trade. Now, I point out that a lot of the critics of free trade blame Republicans for promoting free trade. NAFTA, the World Trade Organization, and most favored nation status for China were all signed by Bill Clinton. We have to protect American manufacturing. That does not mean to be, we should be against free trade, but we have got to be aggressive when countries like China don't play by the rules. We haven't been thus far, and we ought to start right away if we haven't started yesterday.
The key to eliminating our trade deficit, first of all, is an alignment with energy reform. A radical program to end our reliance on foreign oil, because most of our trade deficit is made up in purchases that we make from foreign countries in terms of our energy. We also do need spending reform. Over the past, decade and a half, what everybody remembers 1992, Ross Perot, the debt was just $4 trillion. Now we're giving up on $10 trillion. Americans own most of that debt, but now foreigners own an increasing percentage of it. I believe it's the majority of the debt now is owned by foreign governments. That's a part of the problem as well, and it's something we really need to address. Immigration reform, legal immigration reform, I believe it's a big part of the picture as well. I see one of our friends here, Dr. Mike Major, right here in Germantown, the Cambridge Major Lab. They're heading on down the road here. Dr. Major will tell you that for the scientists he has to bring in from abroad, it costs $20,000 to $25,000 a piece sometimes to get them through our onerous immigration system. Because we limit, with this H-1B visa, we limit all of the United States to 65,000, a maximum of 65,000 highly skilled workers. And what that means is when it's that expensive, our companies have no choice. And by the way, that's unpredictable. Our companies have no choice but to think about relocating abroad, where legal immigration is much less onerous and much less costly. So that's one way also to keep manufacturing here. Finally, I'm a fan of a proposal, actually first proposed by a Marquette University economist, Harvey Wolman, called the balanced trade, something that Warren Buffett actually took up. And it's not the anti-trade, fair trade approach. But what we have now is not free trade. What we need is an approach that argues that we need balance. People should buy from us as much as we sell to them. Thank you. Yeah.
Illegal immigrants in the country. We gave them amnesty. And then what do we have now? About 20 billion. Because the word spread that if the immigration problem in the United States gets out of control, there'll be another amnesty, and another amnesty, and another amnesty. So it seems to me that handling illegal immigration will allow us to get to the legal immigration issues and do it effectively in a way that can't be ignored. And that's what my priorities have been and will be.
Next question. What effect will the change of leadership in Pakistan have on the war against terror? Will we give Congressman Sentinel?
Well, I hope none, but we don't know who the new leaders are. The president has resigned. The ruling coalition has fallen apart. And my fear is that the lack of an effective government is going to be exploited by terrorists, and the open border where terrorists can hop back and forth between Afghanistan and Pakistan is going to be even more open. I think we have to work particularly with the Pakistani military, whether we want to or not, because that seems to be the only stable force in Pakistan at the present time. The political situation certainly is not stable. The war on terrorism is the major external threat facing the United States. Russia can be aggressive, but the war on terrorism is entirely different because it is an underground army and it's kind of like a snake living in the sewer. During my term as chairman of the Judiciary Committee, we were a national security committee. I'm proud to have been the author of the Patriot Act that brought the laws up to date, and it did so in a way that nobody's civil rights were trampled upon because none of the expanded law enforcement powers of the Patriot Act had been held unconstitutional by a court. What we needed to do, particularly with surveillance, is to have warrants issued by name. Because without the Patriot Act, people could have gotten cell phones, made a couple of terrorist-related calls, thrown the cell phone away, and then the Justice Department would have had to have gone and get another warrant. As a result of the Patriot Act, America and Americans are safer, and I'm proud of my role in putting together a law that did that without trampling on anybody's civil rights.
Pakistan is a mess. Congressman is absolutely right about that. And already that border is being exploited across Waziristan, which is really the primary source of terrorists infiltrating, Taliban terrorists infiltrating Afghanistan. One of the problems with Afghanistan is that our approach to Afghanistan is not been a success so far, let's say. There's almost an inverse relationship between the number of troops we put in Afghanistan and the stability in Afghanistan. We're not getting much help from our European partners. The Afghani government is very corrupt. They are growing and exporting increasing levels of heroin. So it's a real problem. The Congressman mentions the Patriot Act, by the way. I want to mention that because he's also responsible for a program called Real ID, which is part of this national security approach. And Real ID is a program, speaking of offended civil liberties, that has managed to unite Republicans and Democrats, people on the right and people on the left, because it was a massive unfunded mandate that came down from Washington that far too many of our own Republicans have been embraced. But at the end of the day, many Republicans across the country have rejected the Real ID. Places like South Carolina, New York, Sanford, Republicans in the Senate. There's a real attempt across the country to roll it back. This year was the year that Real ID was to have taken effect, but it is in effect in not a single state, because about half the states across the country, their state legislatures actually passed bills prohibiting their states from cooperating with the government on it, in part because it was a massive unfunded mandate. Many Republicans have objected to it because it is perceived to be an engagement of privacy. In essence, really a national ID card. I know what's going to happen here. I know that Congressman Sensenbrenner and some of his allies spreading some pretty vicious rumors about me. I got a lot of great amnesty. I'm here asking you to think honestly about your values. Those of you here who are Christians, to think about your Christian values. I am all for protecting the border, and we should be for the rule of law. We are about enforcing the law. But at what price? You know, how much do we enforce the law? Do we split apart families of American citizens? I asked the congressman tonight, I'm anxious to hear his response to this because I've not gotten it yet. There are 4 million children in this country who are U.S. citizens and they are children of illegal immigrants. There are another 3 to 4 million spouses who are illegal residents or citizens who are married to undocumented workers or illegal immigrants. Are we going to split up their families? What are you going to do? Are you going to rip mom and dad away and split families? Are you going to send 4 million kids into our foster care system? My family's got a lot of experience with the foster care system, and it's not very healthy. And I can't imagine what it would mean to put another 3 or 4 million children into that system. That doesn't sit well with me. It may not be popular, but it is an honest approach, and it's something I'm asking you each to do, to look into your soul, to think about how you respond to this. We enforce the law, but I'm not willing to enforce the law in a way that breaks up families and deports American citizens. Now, we face a real choice here tonight between two directions in the Republican Party. One direction, the old direction that has been with us for a long time, that has gotten us into this mess. There's an overarching principle here that is a commonsensical one. If we send the same people back to Washington who got us into this mess, nothing's going to change. I guarantee you. Our congressman has been here for 30 years, really virtually unchallenged, and maybe another 30 years before you get this chance. So I'm asking you to avail yourself of this opportunity. I am. 30 years is a long time. I was 10 years old at the time when you first took office here. And not a real serious challenge since that happened. The last thing I want us to remember is that, and we should all remember this, our representatives in Congress work for us. It's not the other way around. We are their employers and we're their customers. And darn it, I want some customer service. Now, Congressman Sensenbrenner is on a 5-week paid leave to be in his district talking to his constituents at forums like this, and yet he has turned down every single one across the district other than this one. Several of them. Now, there are another couple of weeks until the election rolls around. I'm willing to stay here as long as people want tonight. I would challenge the congressman to stay late tonight, talk to his constituents, or better yet, if he's not willing to do that, I'll debate him any time next week. I would propose, in fact, 3 debates. One debate for every decade he's been in Congress. But regardless, it's his responsibility, and let's remember that they work for us, it's not the other way around. So Matthew,
parts of my job. I put together a good staff.
My staff and I are people-oriented, and people who have come into my office because they've needed help have gotten that help, or if the law doesn't allow them to get the help, they are told what they need to do. Now, I'm not the most politically correct person in the world. We've got too much political incorrectness. But I've worked to build the Republican Party from the time I was in high school and will continue to do so until the time the Lord calls me home. I want to continue working for you with that type of common sense representation. I'll be building the party, not bad-mouthing it. We've got our problems, but we're going to build from our mistakes. And I'm going to be happy if you choose me as your nominee for the Congress of the United States in the 2006 election to continue doing this for the next 2 years. I ask for your vote. God bless you all, and God bless America.